Greetings, WBHF listeners. This is Mike Garcia in the WBHF studio here in, most times beautiful downtown Cartersville. I know you're listening to this on a recording, so hopefully it is a beautiful day today. I am honored here to have our three Republican candidates and really the only declared candidates for Senate District 52. The incumbent Chuck Hufstetler and challengers Derek Keeney and Jeff Lewis. Welcome aboard, gentlemen. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for doing this for us.
Thank you, Mike.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and start with opening statements. I'll give Derek the floor first.
Very good. Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm grateful to you for pulling this together for us. My name is Derek Keeney, and I'm running to serve our district as the citizen servant for State Senate District 52. I bring to the table over 30 years of manufacturing experience in various leadership roles, and have retired and become a financial advisor. Served on the Bartow County Board of Education for over 8 years, and I believe we've left the district in better shape than we found it, and it's got a great foundation moving forward. And I'm looking forward to being part of making these same changes for the state of Georgia.
Jeff?
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having us here. My name is Jeff Lewis, and I am a candidate for State Senate District 52. And one thing I would hope to achieve is to raise the level of what it means to be a conservative here for Northwest Georgia and raise that expectation level. I'm pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, pro-jobs, pro-business, pro-Constitution. And growing up here in Northwest Georgia, I grew up, had a small business that I owned and operated for a number of years, had an opportunity to sell that and do well and help others in the process. For 16 years, I served in the State House for this district representing Cartersville and Bartow County. And for the last 14 years, I've been out of elective office but have served on the state DOT board. And proud of the accomplishments I got to make there for this congressional district I represent, including the Northwest Georgia toll lanes that are going down I-75. That's really, really helped reduce congestion and has been an incredible solution for that. And also, I'm proud that we finally got the what's known as the Rome Connector Highway. It's the Cartersville-Rome Economic Development Corridor. And everything is on track, it's on schedule and on budget, so I'm looking forward to that being accomplished later this decade. And that should help tremendously get folks, our friends in Floyd County and West Bartow County to the interstate in a much more efficient manner. So thanks for having us. I'm Jeff Lewis, Senate District 52.
Absolutely. And then Chuck?
All right, Mike, thanks for having us here. I am the current state senator. This is my 10th year of serving in that position. I spent 8 years on the county commission where I cut property taxes 6 times, negotiated with the Atlanta Braves for the Rome Braves Stadium, and was too in charge of its construction. The only public stadium in Georgia built on time and under budget. It was paid for in a year. In the Senate, I'm the finance chair, have been in that position for 6 years, and I work in healthcare. I do anesthesia. I had a previous career in corporate and finance manufacturing around the country, and that's where that came from, not the operating room, I guess, being the finance chair. But healthcare and finance have been passions of mine. This year, the Finance Committee passed the largest income tax cut in history. There's only been two in history. Actually, I was the sponsor of the other one 4 years ago. We have suspended the gas tax, which I also sponsored. We passed through because I had money left over from last year. Every family the first week of May should get a $500 check, individuals $250. So I've looked after the pennies of the state of Georgia. Will continue to do that. This is a great district. It's got incredible people in local government. They're great to work with, and we're booming right now. Georgia is the number one place to do business. It's the hottest economy in the country, and we want to continue that effort.
Chuck, I'm going to stick with you. You had mentioned about lowering the state income tax. Where's your stance as far as the future of the state income tax?
Well, one thing we're doing next year, something I tried to do this last year and it got caught up in politics, is we're going to have a group of the House, some economists, the Senate, the governor's staff will be working at looking at all these tax credits. We give away way too much in tax credits. That's the last thing I feel like I've got a battle down there. $1.2 billion to the film industry, 30% of their cost. You know, I like the film industry, but it's 0.5%. Our state economy is getting one out of every 12 income tax dollars. So there's a 0.5% taxes right there on one tax credit. We're going to go after these aggressively, and we may need to broaden the sales tax out, such as the bill I sponsored 2 years ago, Marketplace Facilitator, which has brought in money to the state, to all our local governments and schools. And I think we can get very near eliminating the income tax if we keep it up. There's only been two in the history of Georgia since it was put in 1937. I've got both of them, and I'm going to get some more.
Derek?
Thank you, Mike. I am a fair tax advocate, so I believe the state income tax should be zero, and I believe that's very doable. We need to get to focusing on reducing spending. We've grown our state budget year over year. While both of these gentlemen have been in office, we've even grown our state budget. And if we control our spending, either to keep it level or even reduce it and get out of government programs that we need to be better served by our family, our neighbors, our churches, and our communities, then we can reduce the tax burden on our citizens. That would allow us to implement a fair tax, which, as Senator Hufstetler mentioned, would be in the form of a consumption tax. It'd be on our sales tax, and we would be able to get the state income tax down to zero and get back to conservative taxation, which should be broad and low. Presently, we have way too many exemptions and way too many carve-outs. It's been basically because we've got a lot of special interests involved down at the state, and we need to get back to serving our citizens, and that's best done by reducing the tax burden and the state intervention in our lives.
Jeff?
Thank you, Mike. Doing away with the state income tax would really simplify and clean up Georgia's tax code as it relates to the income tax side. 20 years ago, when I was serving in the House, I was part of a study committee that looked at that issue nearly 20 years ago, and we had a pretty good plan thought out of that, and it would basically have reduced the income tax in Georgia at that time roughly 0.3% a year over a period of years until it was gone. In conjunction with that, the budget would have been modified accordingly. We would have forced ourselves to cut the budget and to modify the budget as our revenue side was coming down as well. It was a good plan in place, but sadly there wasn't enough of us there to pass that measure through. The dynamics have changed now. I think there's enough Republicans there, if we hold on to our majorities, to really have a good, healthy conversation of doing something responsible and reasonable with doing away with our income tax, and that's something that we owe the voters to do, is to look at a way of reducing that and get that burden off our plate. I know if other states can do it successfully, we should be even more successful.
Jeff, I'm going to stick with you on this next topic, election integrity. Obviously, it's been a hot topic for the last couple of years. How would you assess where the Georgia elections process is right now?
Well, I'm looking forward to see how it's going to work in these upcoming primaries, and particularly in the general election in November. I think the response that Governor Kemp and the legislature had done to put into place what is coming up new that we're going to be facing is a responsible measure, and that should help. I don't know if it can address every concern that happened in 2020, but I think it's a good start, and we will learn from this next election cycle what needs to be done, modified, what needs to be changed, if anything. But it is absolutely critical that we do maintain voter ID as a part of the process, making access to voting easier within those time constraints, and also when it comes to the counting and doing uninterrupted counting, which is a huge deal, because I know that certain local governments in certain parts of the state did struggle with that for some reason, but maintaining that is going to be good. So I'm looking forward, and I'm very optimistic and hopeful that what is in place will be very helpful going forward.
Chuck?
Well, as you probably know, we passed Senate Bill 202, which had a lot of reforms. You know, we got into a situation with COVID and a lot of absentee voting that overwhelmed our systems. And we made some changes, and, you know, we took the drop boxes out of public places. We had signature ID. The GBI now is involved in investigating fraud, quite a number of things. The Heritage Foundation, a good conservative group, listed Georgia as number one in the country now for election integrity after all that was passed. We will continue to monitor it and make sure that we do everything we can to eliminate fraud. I think there's always been a certain amount of fraud. We know that a person here and there could do something. We've got to keep that to a minimum. The other thing I want to say about the Bartow County Election Board is they're looked at as one of the top four election boards in the state. They do an incredible job. I wish we had others like them. And as a matter of fact, in Floyd County over there, we had some major problems and have had them. And working with Mitchell Scoggins, we actually last November in the redistricting session changed our Floyd board to be exactly like Bartow County's board after a lot of input. And I'm hoping they're going to do a better job this time, that they will equal what's been done in Bartow County.
Derek.
Thank you, Mike. Yes, I'd like to second Senator Hufstetler. Joseph Kirk is our election supervisor, and our elections board in Bartow County run tremendous elections, and they should be held up as the example for the state. When it comes to election integrity, I am not happy with the way the past few elections have been conducted, and I do acknowledge that Senate Bill 202 is a good intermediate step. I would like to actually peel us back to where we're in person with ID on the day of election using hand-marked paper ballots. Now, let's have a discussion from there if there should be exceptions. There's way too many opportunities for people that are not interested in election integrity to circumvent the system with the days of early voting we have, with the drop boxes in the precinct or in the election supervisor's office. I don't understand the need for drop boxes. If you're going to be at that location, then what's the harm in turning in your ballot to a real person? So I've just got some fundamental issues with the way elections are conducted, and whether they would have changed the outcome of any elections, we don't know that, but we certainly could shape things up, and I believe we need to do that.
Derek, go ahead and let's jump ship here and address the state of education in Georgia right now.
Okay, thank you, Mike. I am proud to serve on the Bartow County Board of Education, where I would argue that we're the best district in the state now with our student outcomes and with the way we perform for our taxpayers and being able to consistently lower the millage rate and deliver increased graduation rates, increased ACT scores, increased SAT scores. Students with special needs have over 50% increase in graduation. So we are serving our community, our citizens, and most importantly, our students and their families well. For the state of Georgia, there are issues in districts. There are also good districts that are performing well. I believe the solution in education is competition. And I believe competition would be served by having a voucher program. And I would support working with our legislature in developing a program so that our schools have to perform to the expectation of the parents and the students. And if not, then we give the students options so that they don't have to be beholden to a school district just because of where they live.
Chuck?
Well, we need to remember one size doesn't fit all in education. In 2008, we put in the College and Career Academy in Floyd County. Bartow County has followed, Gordon County and the district has. And I think that's important to put out skilled workers. Not everybody needs to get a college degree in a social science or things like that. We have now, with the raises we've done in education, Georgia has the highest average teacher pay in the South. You can go from Texas to Virginia, and nobody has a higher average salary per teacher than Georgia does. I think it's important to retain people by doing that. And I do want to say, I think Derek's done a good job on the school board here. I think they've done well, and Bartow County's doing well. And we have to continue that progress. I agree with being competitive, and I think that's one thing that helps in Bartow County and Floyd County. There's only about 13 or 14 of the 159 counties that have a city and a county school system. And I think that's one way that competition helps. I think it's shown in those and in the other county as well, Gordon County, that has Calhoun and the county schools, that competition makes people better. And it's good. And I'm proud of the efforts we've made. Rivian Truck, when they came in, they said one of the reasons they moved where they did was because of the improvements in the school system that had happened. Companies coming into Georgia, and we set a record this last year for companies coming in. They want a healthy workforce. They want an educated workforce. They want transportation and broadband. And we're doing the best we can to provide it. And that's why 89% of those new companies coming into Georgia are coming into outside the 10-county metro area. We got plenty of people in Atlanta. We need to grow it in places like Bartow County, and we're doing it.
Jeff?
Yeah, you know, I think our two local school systems here, Cartersville and Bartow County, are great school systems. I know my three sons are a product of the Cartersville school system. I'm a product of the county school system, and I think they do incredible jobs here. And as Republicans, all three of us as Republicans, we do champion that notion of competition in education, because we know from a free market society that competition makes everything better. And so championing that is something that I'm all for, whether it be a voucher system or the money follows the child to where they want to go to school. We need to address those issues, and I champion that. In a different take on it, you know, we right now are experiencing a labor shortage in this state and across the country. And I think one of the unique things that we could get behind as a state is to enhance economic development is fine-tune some of our education to meet the immediate needs of our labor shortage and our workforce shortage. As was mentioned, not everyone needs to go to college. Some people are more, their aptitude is more conducive to learn a trade or a skill, and that can go a lot further in boosting our economy than some of the other disciplines that could be learned. So we do need to encourage that. But in as much as we offer various economic development incentives out there, I think concentrating on that to address our current labor and workforce issue would go a long way in putting us ahead of other states in that regard.
Healthcare. I'm going to go to Chuck first. Go ahead and talk about the current state of healthcare in the state of Georgia.
Well, Georgia has made improvements, and Georgia's got some work to do still. One of the things we did this year was we had a bill that extended postpartum care for mothers from 6 months to 12 months. It was a weakness that we identified a couple of years ago. I have always pushed for using waivers, and Governor Kemp had two waivers, a 1332 waiver and 1115, that use creative ways other than Medicaid. As I said back in 2014, there's a difference between waivers and Medicaid, that we can use these, such as Mike Pence did in Indiana, Arizona, Ohio, good Republican states have done this, to enhance the care of Georgians. Now, preventative care, I work in the operating room. I do anesthesia, and I see the train wrecks that are there from not having preventative care. Most people could avoid that. They come to the emergency room a train wreck. We've pushed for more physician and nurse practitioners positions, and actually our budget for this year is going to expand our university and technical college nurses to double it. We're going to double the number of nurses coming out. We've got to get people preventative care. The other thing that is a personal thing with me, I guess, is tobacco smoking, cigarettes in particular, cigars. There's not a lot of issues because of the frequency of that, but with cigarettes, the American Cancer Society says one-third of all cancers in Georgia come from cigarettes. We need to put more measures in place to keep people from doing things that are going to harm their body and turn them into train wrecks really later on. And the old thing, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, that's where Georgia is trying to head on getting care to the person upstream instead of downstream, when it's way, way more expensive and the outcomes are not going to be as good.
Jeff?
You know, as not being in the healthcare industry, one thing I've been on the side of as a customer and having family members who've been patients and customers of the healthcare industry, one valuable thing I've learned is that it's very critical that those medical professionals, those doctors, those nurses, be the ones who primarily make the decisions and make the calls of the kind of treatment you need. But, you know, far too often we see insurance companies and other carriers of that nature, they sort of run interference and put the brakes on some of the treatment that some people need. And I think that is a serious policy issue that needs to be looked at and addressed. And I think the most valuable component I can bring to the table, not being in the healthcare profession, is listening to those medical professionals out there who know what they need to do and who know how to deliver their level of care and pretty much follow their lead on many aspects of what they would like to see so that health care can be delivered more directly and better right to the patient.
Derek?
Thank you, Mike. Yes, this is one of the areas that I believe I differentiate myself. I don't believe government should have a role in health care. That's not the intent of our government, and that's the health care has only gotten more expensive and gotten worse since government has gotten involved, both at the state and with Obamacare at the federal level. That intervention, to a certain degree, became required because of difficulties with insurance companies and way they were getting involved in the medical system and taking the consumer out of the equation and putting the insurance company in the middle. I think we need to get the consumer back involved in their delivery of care. I agree with Senator Hufstetler that primary care and preventative medicine is certainly the best way to go. We have our hospital, our folks in the emergency room are now the primary care provider to so many people, and that's not the way the healthcare system should work. So healthcare is fundamentally broken. I believe it got worse when the government got involved, and now we need to start finding a way to extricate the government from the situation and get the consumer involved in healthcare, allow doctors and nurses to deliver medicine and not keep up with the bureaucracy.
Jeff, what is the number one thing the state needs to do in the transportation sector?
Great question. There's a number of things, and Georgia overall is very well positioned. We always rank number one or number two in the state as far as the condition of our transportation infrastructure, our roads and bridges are concerned. We had board meetings last week, and we got educated very well on this issue of concrete shortages. Where some of this concrete is imported from is having trouble getting here, and that's having an extraordinary inflationary effect on concrete, which is going to come back to us being able to deliver projects in a timely manner and in a budget constraint manner. So that's just one issue, one side of it, but I'm very proud of the way our department, the Georgia DOT, has operated. We're in the process of basically retrofitting roughly 15,000 bridges throughout this state. And we're about halfway in that program right now. We have a major mobility project going on in the north side of Metro Atlanta, improving 285 and its connections to 20 on both sides, as well as to 75, 85, and to 400. And even here in northwest Georgia, I referenced the Rome-Cartersville Economic Development Corridor that is on schedule and to be completed later this decade. Old Alabama Road is moving along its own schedule. So we have a lot of road projects there. And that type of infrastructure development is an incredible and great way to invest our tax dollars and our tax resources into, because that helps spurs economic development.
Derek?
Thank you, Mike. Yes, transportation is a critical issue, and it seems that our State Department of Transportation does a very good job with the programs they have. We manage to bring programs to a screeching halt when the federal government gets involved, so it's best that we try to do all we can, as much as we can, at the state level. Roadways and bridges certainly should be the priority. We have bridge infrastructure, which is declining. We know that. We even have out in U-Harley, they're having to do some bridge repairs right now as we speak, that the city's paying for and the county's pitching in. But transportation is evolving, and our gas tax right now that the Senate has waived until after the election is going to pay for the transportation projects. Of course, as vehicles move away from gas, there's going to have to find a revenue stream to pay for that, but also we're going to start seeing the evolution of perhaps at some point in time, not every homeowner is going to have a car. Not everyone, we're going to get into some type of transportation system that's on demand. So we need to be ready and prepared for that. I think the best thing the legislature can do is to make sure the Department of Transportation is properly managed and funded, and then I think the Department of Transportation is doing a very good job, and we just need to allow them to do the work that they're doing.
Chuck?
Well, about a half dozen years ago, or maybe more, we passed a transportation bill which changed the funding mechanism, and it brought a lot more funds into the transportation area, and I think it's been a boom for our getting our infrastructure back in place that we should have. Sometimes when we're on the highways, we think, well, there's too much construction going on, but we're trying to catch up now. You know, when I got into the Senate, the Rollins property was where people were trying to go through with a connector, and I think that was just a decades-long failed effort. And so we worked on an alternative route. I think everybody worked together on that. The frustrating part, as Jeff knows, is the federal government makes it incredibly slow to get anything done with their funds, and too often we need them to have the finances to do it. And they slow us down a lot of times on these projects. Anything we could do without them, we certainly do a whole lot quicker than they do. So we've got to continue to invest in that. We're bringing in companies into Georgia. They're providing revenues to the state that gives us the money to invest more, and we're going to continue to invest in infrastructure and keep growing the transportation in the state. Now, we did, one example is our Savannah port, when we talk about transportation, is now the third busiest port in the country. It's the place where people are going because the wait's not there that they have in other locations. We're giving them customer service. And one thing we did with that a couple of years back, or probably even a little bit more than that, was put a inland rail port up in Chatsworth so that the containers can go up there by rail instead of by truck and get distributed out. And I do want to point out that Northwest Georgia is the number one importer-exporter through the port of Savannah of any other area of the state, even though we're the furthest away. And we've got to always be creative and do what we can to get trucks off the road and use any source of transportation we can. And I think, like Derek said, it's going to evolve. Things are going to change. We've got to be changing with it.
Now, obviously, inflation is a worldwide problem, a national problem. Derek, what do you think can be done at the state level to combat that?
Well, thank you, Mike. The inflation actually was created when the government grew M2 money supply by over 40%. And absent reducing that money supply, inflation is unless you're not a Keynesian, inflation is going to follow. So there's not a lot the state can do to stop inflation. The only thing we could do is mitigate the impact of inflation. The best thing we can do there as a legislature would be fiscal responsibility all day, every day. So we only spend money that's necessary, and we only confiscate money from the taxpayers that's necessary. All too often, we take more money than we need, and we spend more money than we should. And then when inflationary times come, we grow budgets even more because of the impacts of inflation. So we always need to be cognizant of the dimes and pennies that we spend and position ourselves so that our citizens have more money in their banks, more money in their wallets, and more money in their investment accounts so that they can prosper through inflationary times.
Jeff?
You know, Mike, sometimes it's a simple matter of just saying no. And as was referenced, when our federal government just pushed all of this money into the system, which helped exacerbate the inflationary prices that we're seeing, that is one of the things that has to be said no to from time to time. And the state can have an influence on how the feds operate up there, or at least we should try to do that. But, you know, at the DOT, we are seeing how that inflation, as I referenced earlier, is affecting us to the point that we're having to cancel some projects that we have planned because the bids are not coming in as they had originally been estimated. And when that happens, we have to scrap the project, sharpen our pencils, and go back to the drawing board and put it out for rebid. And the thing we don't want to do, we don't want to discourage companies and contractors from bidding on these projects. We want them to stay engaged because we know they have employees they have to keep on the payroll, and it's a trickle effect. So we're having to sharpen our pencils, and we're one state agency that does that at DOT. And I think we're one of the state agencies that do it the best, because at the end of the day, we have to have the money already committed to a project before we can let a project occur. That money has to be banked and there, so we cannot outspend ourselves. We put that constraint on ourselves, and that's what we as a state need to do, and we do that to a degree. But more than that, that's what we need the feds to understand.
Chuck?
Well, February and March of last year, Blake Tiller and I, Blake's the chair of appropriations from Vidalia, we put out a monthly newsletter, and we said this is exactly where we're headed for 2 or 3 months. Janet Yellen, on March 16th of last year at the U.S. Treasury, said, we have inflation under control. We've got ways to take care of this. And by the way, this is the new economy. It doesn't work this way. Well, I hope she's not saying that anymore, because she didn't have it under control. And it's not a new economy. It's freshman level macroeconomics with supply and demand. And it's not that Blake and I were that smart. We just actually paid attention maybe our freshman year in college to our macroeconomics course. And we have we've got to change Washington. We're not part of Washington. We do the best we can, and that's why right now our citizens are suffering under this Biden inflation. We're trying to get back the $500 checks for money left over last year, the suspension of the gas tax and income tax cuts. We're trying to help them through this crisis and hope that it doesn't get too bad before saner heads in Washington take over. At the state level, balance our budget, obviously. We've always had a balanced budget. We have a record fund balance. Our fund balance is actually now at the statutory limit because we know bad times are going to come, and you can't have, if you're a business or an individual or a government or anything, you can't have the bank empty when bad times hit. So we're positioned the best we can be to take care of this, over double the fund balance that's ever been there. And it's a rainy day fund, we call it, but right now it's raining pretty hard on our citizens, and we're doing the best we can to help them out.
Chuck, I'll let you start with the closing statements and tell the voters why they should reelect you to another term, and also include how they can find out more about your campaign.
Okay. Well, it's really been an honor to serve this area. My great-grandfather is buried at Red Top Mountain in a Confederate grave at Bethel Baptist Cemetery. Our heritage goes deep here, family unions in the Uvalde area, and it's really been so good to me to have these two counties and part of Gordon County in the district. I am the finance chair. That's one of the top three or four committees there. The Atlanta paper has listed me as one of the foremost influential senators for the last 5 years in a row. I can get things done. I got it done with getting the funding for Georgia Highlands, used our finance committee to get some incentives for the museums to help out. If I return, I'll actually be the number five in seniority Republican senator down there. So I think I'm positioned to help out Bartow County as best I can. And I look forward to continuing that and working with the great local leadership here. Steve Taylor came in the same year I did. He's overseen an incredible job of growth here in Bartow County, and it's been fortunate to have people like him and many others in leadership. My campaign website's chuckhufstetler.com. I've got a Senate address. My cell phone number is 706-252-4085. It's on my business cards. I found that works better than playing phone tag, and look forward to continuing to serve this area if the voters choose that.
Jeff?
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having us here. I think what I bring to the table is years of experience from having previously served and then serving on the state board, having experience, having the knowledge and the connections throughout state government to deliver a better product for this area of Georgia. I think what's important that someone in this position can do is to offer meaningful constituent services, and that was something I was known for when I served in the House, and I still have the opportunity to do it even now that I'm out of elected politics. I get those calls from time to time, and I'm glad to serve in that role. But I think that's the important element here that I want to bring to the table, is to serve the citizens of this district, to serve them in a way that would raise their expectation level of what they should expect from an elected official. So I'm Jeff Lewis. I want to ask for your vote. You can reach me at 770-877-2937. That's my cell phone. It's the only number I have. And I would welcome to hear from you, and I would just like to ask that you vote for Jeff Lewis for State Senate.
Derek?
Thank you, Mike. Yes, I'd first like to thank both of these gentlemen for their many years of service down at the General Assembly. I'm looking forward to bringing a fresh face and a fresh voice to serving the citizens of Northwest Georgia. I strongly believe in self-reliance and in our individual citizens. I believe that problems and needs of communities are best solved by us serving our families, our neighbors, our churches, and our community. It's not by us giving a tax dollar to an agnostic and amoral Senate or government to then spend inefficiently and maybe return to us nickels on the dollar. It's best for us to keep our tax dollars here so we can serve our communities as they have their need. I'm going down to be a citizen servant to be responsive to the needs of our community, and I look forward to the opportunity to fight against the growth and overreach of government and fight for the ability for us to care for ourselves. My website is DerekKeeney.com. My cell number, which we've had for over 30 years, is 770-606-9776. Look forward to serving our community and being their voice down at the state capitol.
All right. I thank you three gentlemen for coming in. Again, these were your three candidates for Senate District 52. And thanks for listening to WBHF. Remember, early voting starts Monday, the general election May 24th. And this is pretty much it, guys. There's no Democratic race in this district, so don't wait until November because it'd be too late. So come out and vote soon, and thanks for listening.